You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Yeah, you know, it's like, welcome back. It's like part two. We had so much fun with Josh DeMello last week. We got him back again. But, as you know, we were in last week's show, we were talking about the upcoming Fishers Forum. We hope you had a good time, those of you that could make that. Thank you for showing up, and thank you for sharing your manao. And one of the other things that we really, really like is every time there's a full-blown council meeting going on here on Oahu, we get to meet folks from the far-flung, distant areas of the globe, all included in this. And so before we introduce once again our special guest, Josh, let's talk about a little bit how maybe what the council is like in the first place. When we say the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, that means that there must be some more of them. What does it mean anyway?
And so if you just break up the words in our name, you don't, yeah, you look at Western Pacific first. Yeah. Western Pacific is all these areas that are on the left side of the map if you're looking at the Pacific Ocean. And it really starts with Hawaii in the central, and you have American Samoa in the south, and Guam and Sina Mai. Mm. They're all, which are all territories, right, of the United States. Then you have all these little islands in between, Wake,
which
Johnston,
are independent, right?
So, right, which, yeah, which were, I guess, manned during the World War II. And so these are all areas where the U.S. lays claim.
And they're still using stuff that was there from the war, right?
Right.
Amazing.
Right. Yeah. And so we're looking at, you look at regional, it means that we conduct our business regionally as opposed to nationally. And so we look at problems and solutions that affect our all of those islands in the Western Pacific. Fishery management is what we do. We manage the fisheries, and that includes every part of the fishery from the guys that sell the bait all the way up to you eating the fish. And then the council is just a group of people that come together and make the decisions.
And what I think is really neat about it, that's the most succinct, you know, description I've ever heard in 1 minute. It's in the beginning. But what it means is that there are others. And we often say, you know, yeah, but we're different. And the word yeah, but, you hear this all the time. And yeah, but we are different, but aren't we are also very, very similar. But what makes it, doesn't it put it more of a stress on us because we're the largest geographic slice of the council?
Right. So we're one of eight around the country, but we are the largest. We have the largest exclusive economic zone, 1.5 million square miles of EEZ waters, and so the others are in Alaska, the West Coast, the Gulf, and then split up along the East Coast, and then the Caribbean as well.
Yeah, and you could swim for your whole life and not swim to the four corners of the Western region, right? Okay, so that means that we, from time to time, we have the opportunity to spend time for people that come from far away to be part of it, and that's what we're going to do today. Tell us a little bit about Nate.
So in each of our island areas, we have island coordinators that are staff. And so a few weeks back, we talked to Floyd Mosca from Sina Mai, mm-hmm, and so this time we wanted to bring in Nate Ilawa from American Samoa, and he's been our longest tenured coordinator there.
Yeah, and welcome back. Long time no see.
Thanks, Mike.
Do you get here sometimes not for a meeting?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
For those who don't know, first of all, in American Samoa is how far away by plane?
It's about 5 hours and 20 minutes.
Mm, so it's just like flying to the mainland.
Yeah.
It's just about,
like, equal distance, yeah.
So two movies.
Yeah, two movies.
How long have you been doing that?
Let's see. I started on the advisory panel in American Samoa, and I became a contractor doing the coordinator job out there in 2013.
And when you say out there,
American Samoa,
yeah, where does your branch of the family come from?
We are from the west side of the main island of Tutuila,
mm-hmm,
and so we have a big clan out on the west side, yeah. Leone Bay, which is where the first church was built by the Europeans that came over. Mm. So,
to save us, right? To save
you guys. That's right, us heathens.
Yeah, that. In other words, that's a great similarity. And it, but the point that always amazes me the most, and you can explain this, I've been told that there are more Samoans outside of Samoa by far than there are in Samoa.
Oh, by a huge margin.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
West coast of the United States, all the way from San Diego up to Washington State.
I met Samoans in Alaska. I met them in Washington, and certainly in Oregon, all over Canada, Vancouver, everywhere. And actually, climate-wise, the here in the main Hawaiian Islands is more like Samoa than anywhere else in the country. And yet, and aren't there more Samoans living on Oahu than there are in Samoa too?
Yeah, way more.
Yeah,
it's like 5-1. I think.
Yeah, amazing. Huh? Okay, so. You spend your time right now doing what you're doing full-time?
Yeah, full-time back in American Samoa.
And tell me what that is when somebody says, hey, Nate, what are you doing?
So I guess to sum it up, I'm the council's liaison to the fishing community, to the local government, to the federal agencies that are stationed out there in American Samoa, and also to the community in general.
I think the reason why is because we're talking off the air, and we were talking with Josh DeMello about it a little too, and that is it's sort of interesting is what some people see or what they think they see, and then they come back or they go to other parts in the world and impart that information. It's not terribly accurate. I saw a story that was concerned about the what's similar to Samoa as to Oahu with regards to the way fish are sold, like at the fish auction, for instance. What's the auction like in Samoa?
So we have a fish market.
And, that's what I meant, market. Yeah.
The big day is Friday, and on Fridays, this place is jam-packed. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're lining up outside before they open, and there's been some recent stuff.
Well, I saw accusations or thoughts that said that it is it's not doing well. It's not a good thing.
Yeah, and this couldn't be further from the truth.
Wow.
I mean, this place is doing great business. And this was one of the fish market was actually something that we helped the local government get constructed using sustainable fisheries funds. And so
physically, what does the plant represent? Where this market takes place?
It's in the main marketplace downtown.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the southeast corner of the building. You can go in, you can get fillets of fish. Mm. They have poke bowls, sashimi bowls. You can get ahi salads, a whole bunch of different value added.
Gee, sounds like Oahu.
Right. And so the people are there every Friday religiously.
I think that maybe you can do this too. Back in the day, before technology and modern appliances and everything else, everything was from ocean to table. You know, and I do think that where you are, that's more so than even here on Oahu, that you can share that too, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So people are used to buying for today and for tomorrow.
That's right. Yeah. They buy it and they go and feed their families it for the next couple of days. And that's one of the big reasons we wanted that fish market, is to help the local fishermen not have to sell their fish on the side of the road in coolers of melted ice or hanging up on strands with flies on it.
So. You know, I can remember in previous visits there, that's how it was. And those of you that have spent time in French Polynesia and Tahiti know the same thing. People walking down the street with the fish over their back, waiting for somebody to pull over on the side of the road and buy it.
Yep.
That's not something we would look forward to in a while, because we got good coolers and we got good ice. Isn't ice a commodity in Samoa?
It really is. Yeah. And that fish market also has it's about 1,000 pound per day ice flaker that we were able to help the government procure. And so the guy who runs that fish market, he actually gives out ice to the fishermen. If you go into the market to buy fish and you have your own cooler, you can fill it with ice. So it's definitely a commodity.
And gang, I want to tell you something. We take so many things for granted. Some of these folks on the islands can't. And that means if you have a weather area or a problem, you can lose power, you can lose the airport, you can lose a harbor. So people are very used to saying, I'm not going to work today. I got to go feed the family. I'm going to go catch some fish.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. There's another thing too. You'd be a good person to understand this. Sometimes you read in the paper here, you hear that, well, Samoa has traded or given up some of their quota for Big Eye or for tuna, so that the other boats from the main Hawaiian Islands can fish. What happens to the money that they get?
So that money is very valuable to the territories of, like American Samoa, to build fisheries development infrastructure. We've used a portion of it to get the project started on an extension of the existing main Malaloa dock in the Pango Harbor, which would allow our longline boats to finally have a dedicated docking space. They've been
catch as catch can, right?
Always. That's right. Every time a fuel tanker or a cruise ship is in port, they have to shuffle back and forth between the main port dock and the Starkist dock. Mm-hmm. So they'll finally have a dedicated home to dock their boats.
But, you know, a lot of people thought that the minute, when as soon as there was an exchange of quota for money, that the money was all going to go into the building up Samoa's own long line fleet. But maybe you can explain that one of the problems that we've had in the past, and I don't know how to explain it, you can, is that it's not want a desire for people catching fish, but they don't have a market. So that some of these boats, you can't expand too much what they can do, because at the end of the day, they can catch fish, but what do they do with it?
That's right. And so because of the limited market, we're working on some things to try to build the market locally, the retail market. But all of the projects that are funded with money that comes over from the quota transfer to the Hawaii Longline Association, those projects are identified previously in the American Samoa's Marine Conservation Plan, which the government there puts together.
But put together a good plan, Nate, but there's no money sometimes.
Right.
You're going to have an ice house, but
it's a waiting game.
Yeah. So now this is something that fuels that, right?
It is. Yeah. And so it's very important in our advisory panel back home just recommended that we are allowed to allocate up to 2,000 pounds of our Big Eye to the state of Hawaii longliners.
Yeah, and you know, it right now it seems like it's working pretty well. Isn't it something that is assessed on a regular basis? And how much do the local inshore fishermen appreciate somebody being able to help them get a boat ramp or an ice machine?
They do appreciate it, and you know, those funds have been used, like you said, for boat ramps, not only in the harbor, but in some of the outer villages on the west side, out in the outer islands, in the Manu'a Islands. We've put boat ramps and ice and fuel facilities. So these projects that are funded with that money are very valuable.
Every time we do this, somebody asks me later, And I forget to ask the question. When we talk about life in American Samoa as important to, say, life in Honolulu, we do know that some things are just prohibitively not possible, you know, but they're not big wages, so people get along. What's the difference in, the lifestyle as to what people do and what they can afford to do based on the income that they're getting in a place that's expensive to live?
Yeah, so the in general, the salary scale is much lower in the territory, and we rely a lot on the fishing industry. I mean, the local economy is the backbone, is the fishing industry. If Starkist were to ever go away, that place would be...
Oh, yeah. Maybe you could explain that. When we talked earlier about the Starkist docks in the harbor, there was an investment made, Peter, I can't remember who it was, a great book called Aku. I want to say Young, but it's not Young, another. But explain how that fishery worked and how many people depended on Starkist, and it was the biggest employer.
It's the biggest employer by far. Mm-hmm. And if you, not just the 2,400 employees that work there, which are 2,400 paychecks spent in the territory every year, taxes paid, but all of the companies that rely on the boats that are there, the fuel sold to them, just the ripple effect of not having that cannery would just devastate the economy.
So their desire is, when we talk about that, is that their fleet go out and catch fish, come back quick, they get in there, they get processed and handled there. And I do know that it was precarious for a while, that there were some real concerns that was going to go away. and that a lot of people stepped up to make it keep going. How's it doing now?
Well, you know, we lost the chicken of the sea in 2009. It was actually the day after the tsunami.
That was, by the way, that's now 10 years ago.
And so we're still reeling from the effects of that cannery closing up. And so definitely people are cognizant of the issues that are facing the cannery. There's the supply of fish, which is always an issue, especially since we lost fishing days and fishing grounds recently. So people, it's definitely something that people have in the back of their minds at all times.
Yeah, when you say that and I think that folks, if you're listening, if you just joined us, Nate Ilao is from Samoa, and he is the council's ears and eyes and boots on the ground there. And what we're doing is talking about the similarities and the differences. And it is extremely different because they're pretty good fishermen from what we understand, but they also have a limited market. So there's that dilemma. You need more money. So what's being done by the fishery and what's being done by the council to encourage fishermen to be able to be steady with their catch so that we can make a market plan so they can sell it, they can leave the country?
Yeah, and I'll go back to the fish market that we helped the government put together, because the vision for that was that the fishermen would finally have a hub where they could sell their fish, where fishermen could share costs for overhead and whatnot. And so that never really materialized as we tried to get the local Lia fishermen to take over. But what we've had is a company that's come in to lease the fish market now, and he acts as a fish buyer, going to all of the local boats. He's mainly been getting his fish from bycatch from the longline boats.
And these, by the way, just so that we know, are typically what species that people will relate to?
Big eye, yellowfin, marlin. Those are the main ones. Some wahoo.
Is there a good skipjack population in Samoa?
Yeah. So we'll get the aqua.
Yeah, because from what I understood back in the day, that Starkis relied on the skipjack because they could, you know, it was virtually not hard to catch. You didn't have to travel too far.
That's right. And then, so we get quite a bit of skipjack. But now he's working on the smaller boats. He's trying to get these Lia fishermen to see the value in going fishing more frequently.
Okay, when you say the smaller boats, you're talking basically?
These are our little double-hulled catamaran fishing boats.
We're looking 20 feet.
Right.
In the 20-foot range. Not built for distance, but they're good boats, and they can handle it, but you still must have them go out more often, right?
Right, and so because of the size of the boat and the limited hold capacity, they're limited to day trips. But what the fish market guy is trying to do now is get these guys to go on these day trips and come straight to him, sell him the fish, because the fish market does have the walk-in cold storage. And now we've also got the cold storage up and running at the airport, too.
Yeah, and let's talk about that a lot, because I do know that a lot of people rely on being able to buy fish and take it and put it on a plane.
That's right. So there's a lot of fish that usually travels up when people come up to visit their relatives here.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But something new that's happening just recently, as recent as last week, is that the same company that runs the fish market delivered its first export to the west coast of the United States. Mm-hmm. And so they sent, I believe, about 2,500 pounds of tuna up to California, and they were able to utilize that Hawaiian Air cold storage for that fish to wait for the plane to get in.
You know, Nate, what would be valuable for people to know is maybe some, you know, nickel to nickel price comparisons. So for instance, if you go into the fish market there in Samoa to buy a ahi fillet, what would be the range? I do know that it fluctuates from season to season, but what would be the average, say, price per pound of certain cut fish?
The ahi, big ahi, you're looking at about $7-$8 a pound. Wahoo and marlin, $4 to $6 a pound, depending on quality.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Isn't the quality much more discernible there? Aren't the buyer there just as sophisticated as they are here in the main Hawaiian Islands?
I think they can get there. I think here. The average consumer is a lot more savvy about what's the best quality.
Yeah, because there's so much, you know, and you can look at them side by side. But what I'm getting at is that more and more of our audience is accustomed to try to find origin of the fish. Where did that fish that I'm buying come from?
Right.
Same thing must apply there. They must want to know.
And I think that is something that people are learning now since the fish market has been opened. And like I said before, they'd relied so long on buying fish from melted ice coolers on the side of the road that quality, now they're finding out, wow, this better quality fish produces such a much better meal. So,
yeah, and you know, that being said, and in the fact that you came up here for the meeting, the 178th meeting that just concluded, what was your expectation? What were some of the things that you were hoped to see discussed, and then making sure that your end of the fishery is constantly part of the big family?
Well, the council meetings afford us a great opportunity to, and just the way I'll speak about the way the council process is set up, it's very much a grassroots process where we take information from folks on the ground, and then that information comes from, say, advisors like the AP guys, and it is read here at the council meetings, and then oftentimes those recommendations from American Samoa become recommendations to the U.S. Department of Commerce, which become, you know,
rules. By the way, that brings up the thought of investigation of crime that takes place, of things that go wrong there. What is it like in with regards to rules and regulations in Samoa, and more importantly, people that conform to them and then people that violate them? Are there penalties? Are there consequences?
Oh, there are definitely consequences. And for the boats that fish in the EEZ in federal waters, you know, they have the same observer coverage requirements that the boats here.
You know that, gang? In other words, we thought that we were the most inspected fleet. It's the same in Samoa, isn't it?
It's exactly the same. Now, in territorial waters, the local government has a lot of shortcomings as far as enforcement capability, and also the statutes on the book are really old, and the local Department of Marine and Wildlife is actually working on an amendment package to kind of update some of those regulations for
size and
fisheries.
Limits and that kind of stuff.
Right, just to give some teeth to some of these enforcement things.
Yeah, but I also heard that it's a big, small place. So what happens is the bad guys and the good guys are cousins. I mean, you know, it's really, really hard to enforce rules when, you know, your next door neighbor might be the one that's offending. Doesn't that put the onus on people to do the right thing?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And so it's good and bad. The good thing is it's easy to find out who's breaking the rules because the coconut wireless is strong.
Oh,
back home.
And immediate, right? Do you think social media is something going viral? Something go coconut over there pretty quick, too, right?
Oh, it does. Yeah. The bad thing, like you said, is that oftentimes everyone's related. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to slap the wrist of your auntie or uncle. Yeah. So it's a challenge.
Yeah, but doesn't it sometimes work at the family level where the family elder tells the boy that might be getting into some bad stuff with his friends and taking illegal sides or fish or areas or season, hey, you just can't do that.
And it's usually the older uncles, the grandpas, who will go and educate the younger guys about, you know, how much, what they should take. And where the actual justice system back home might fail, the family unit usually comes up and compensates for things. Things are dealt with culturally within the family.
Oh, yeah, and there are consequences. I know about, you know, but here's another thing. We were discussing last week on the program a bunch of things about, you know, limits and laws and rules and all that kind of stuff. And it what dawned on me then is that, you know, we have to be able to appreciate how different we are and yet how similar we are. So that must mean that when you guys get to interact on these committees, that you feel like you're not in some far-flung part of the Pacific that nobody's paying attention.
Right, and you know, these are people who are, I mean, we might have council members that disagree on certain issues, but everybody is knows everybody. Mm-hmm. There's relations, whether they're familial or just friendship ties. Yeah. So you have these situations where they might be at odds, mm-hmm. but after the meeting on different issues, but after the meeting, you know, you fly home together.
I think that one of the other things that they must ask you, they certainly ask around here, is when somebody goes wandering around trying to inspect, say, the net size of the eye, or where they're putting it, or if they're soaking it. We have here in the main islands, we have a bunch of people that are not from here. Hard to monitor. They just seemingly break the law when they want to. But let's talk about that being probably less likely.
Less likely, just because it's such a small place. The guys that work in local enforcement know where all the fishing areas are. Mm-hmm. So. And we also rely on the coconut wireless. I mean, if people are fishing in a way that they're not supposed to, word gets back pretty quick.
With the method of families joining and doing netting, is it the same as it is on Oahu? Has it been restricted? Are there still wide use of gill nets, lay nets?
Yeah, they're restricted. Mm-hmm. But every now and then we'll have the seasonal run, will have the asina, the goatfish, or mm-hmm. the akule, we call them back home, where the village will come out in force, and sort of like the huki lau here.
That's so the we big do
the,
party, yeah.
The lau, and yeah. So, you know, the family will come together, the community, the villages will come together and fish. But that same kind of community network is also a big help to the enforcement guys when it comes to reporting illegal fishing. And it's usually the folks who are here that own stores from China or from the Philippines that end up getting reported to the enforcement
hey,
guys.
You know, and I understand it. And you can explain to your small businessman as well. You know, you're reliant on customer relationships. I can understand when somebody, if they've had a very slow day and somebody comes in and they might want to, you know, not verify somebody's age when they buy a bottle of beer, or, you know, that kind of stuff. It must be tempting sometimes.
Yeah, it's got to be. And especially because there isn't a lot of wealth in the territory. Yeah. But I think that the businesses, for the most part, do a good job of policing things on their own. We actually have helped the local government set up a fisherman ID mm-hmm. card
that's
program.
Wonderful idea. Huh?
So that combined with the department's, the local marine and wildlife department's commercial seafood vendor program. So now they're required to purchase fish only from fishermen who have that ID card.
You know, it's interesting now because here in the main islands, they're looking at, I don't want to say licensing, but it is licensing. And there's a lot of people that don't want to, they say, wait a minute, that's our right. Mm-hmm. That's our birthright. But sometimes if you say, well, look, the monies collected by licensing are going to go into running the fishery.
Right.
And so is that thought of there too, that, hey, maybe this is a good idea because it's not going into some general fund and being blown, it's being used in the fishery.
Yeah. And when the local government first introduced it, a lot of the fishermen weren't receptive to the idea, but you know it's $5 a year.
You're using nice words. I think they were just playing. We're not going to do that.
Yeah, they were. There were a lot of pissed off fishermen. Yeah.
Hey, what about this? I know that you get this asked this all the time, and I got audience members out there that inquiring minds want to know. What's the difference between America? What's the difference in Samoa between Samoa and American Samoa?
So American Samoa is the eastern group of the islands, which is the main island of Tutuila. Right across the channel where I live, right across the channel from us is the little island of Aonu'u.
How far is that?
It's about a mile and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
And our executive director, Mrs. Kitty Simons, has a chiefly title from that island of Aonu'u, Seutatia, which is a title from the island of Aonu'u.
Yeah.
And then to the east of us are the Manu'a Islands, which are three islands, Ofu, Tau, and Olosenga. And then about 30 miles west of our main island of Tutuila is Western Samoa,
right.
or what is called Independent Samoa now, which are the islands of Upolu and Savai'i, which are much bigger islands and independent.
And from what I understand, population size varies, but what is the difference in the population between Samoa and American Samoa?
Independent Samoa has about double the population that we have, even though the size is, I think, seven or eight times the land size.
Yeah, big piece of land. Yeah.
But it's not as densely populated as American Samoa. And they are their main business partners are New Zealand, which is why they actually jumped across the date line. So they had five full
days. More business days, right?
Right.
Yeah, interesting stuff. But I still think, though, and it's fascinating, and it certainly is a place that values tourism, but the fishery is the backbone of what you're doing.
It really is.
That's fun for you. What kind of a, what's your business? What's your food business?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I own a small brew pub,
mm-hmm.
so we make our own craft beers, and we have a little
I'm assuming
menu.
You're serving a little fish there, too.
Yes, definitely. And I was happier than anyone when the fish market opened up.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, if somebody is used to coming on their way home and having a nice brew and a piece of fish, if there's no piece of fish, they go, where's my fish?
Yeah. You know, there's just been so much more fish in... You used to have to just go to the restaurants, right? The big hotel restaurants. Yeah. Now, all these little mom-and-pop restaurants, they've got the fresh fish, so the market is growing.
I'm assuming that the fish is the protein of choice because of the cost of meat and the availability of it. And interestingly enough, we talk about this a lot, who can eat the most Spam and the most Vienna sausage and all that. Isn't that part of the Pacific, where you are, huge consumers of those way back from World War II?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And... You know, if it's a competition, we're going to win hands down when it comes to Spam eating.
Yeah. It's got more Spam crates and stuff. Well, hey, listen, I'm so glad that you're able to spend a little time with us, Nate, on this trip up. You must have continuing high expectations. So it looks like you're sticking around for a while.
Yeah, I'll be here throughout the end of the week and next week for the council meeting.
What's the biggest shop for me list? What do people want you to bring?
It's always the Mac Nut chocolates.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's okay. Number one.
And I imagine that there's a few people who want some lures and some skirts and some of the other things that our fishing supply guys have.
Yeah, I always get those requests to stop in at POP and pick stuff up.
Hey, Nate, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mike.
Aloha, my friend. Okay, that's going to wind it up for this week. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next time. And don't forget, if you want to hear something on the program... Go to WPCouncil.org and look around and then send me an email, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. And please put on your regular place to visit list, the council website. Really interactive. There's lots of stuff you can do. And if you're a teacher, there's a lot of stuff you can teach your kids by learning at WPCouncil.org. See you next time. Aloha.